Meta's Threads draws advertiser interest and Twitter's ire. Plus, warning signs for lenders ahead of next week's bank earnings.
Profits at these smaller lenders are expected to decline 23% this year. And these sorts of banks are especially dependent on the interest income, which is the key way that they make money. So across the board, it's expected to be a really a tough environment, especially for community banks.
And we mark 100 days since the detention of our colleague Evan Gershkovich. It's Friday, July 7th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The new microblogging app Threads from Facebook parent Meta has signed up more than 30 million users in less than 24 hours. It has surged to the top of App Store download charts and become a trending topic on Twitter, the social network that it hopes to upend. And while Threads is, for now, advertiser-free, several ad agency executives expect that it could hold an edge over competitors given its connection to Meta's existing ecosystem. However, our global tech editor Jason Dean told me it's unclear just how much revenue could be on the table.
Twitter, the incumbent in this form of social media, has only ever, I think it topped out around $5 billion in revenue the year before Musk bought it. That's not insignificant to a company of Meta's size. It had $116 plus billion in revenue last year. So in terms of a real needle mover for Meta, they will have to get a lot of advertisers interested. This type of social media platform, Twitter, just has never taken off as an advertiser medium the way that Facebook and TikTok have yet. So it remains to be seen how easy they'll be able to convert that interest into dollars and cents when they choose to do so, but it's there.
All right, so it's still early days here, but we have already seen Twitter accusing Meta of using its trade secrets for Threads. This was in a letter sent to Meta by a Twitter attorney yesterday. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, the thrust of it was, we know you hired some of our people. Of course, Elon Musk fired or pushed out thousands of Twitter employees. And so it's not surprisingly, some of them went to work at other social media companies. And we see from reports that you've launched this app, which they call the Copycat, and be warned that we will protect our intellectual property vigorously. Meta responded that none of the people who formerly worked at Twitter were among the engineers who worked on Threads. So unclear where that will go. But what underlies all of this to some degree is this rather remarkable and highly unusual deep feud between two of the richest men on the planet, Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, who've long disagreed with each other. And the rivalry has really intensified in recent months. And of course, they've also talked about actually physically fighting at some point as well.
That was Wall Street Journal global tech editor Jason Dean. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is using a visit to China to speak out about the treatment of American businesses in the country. Meeting with members of the American Chamber of Commerce in Beijing, Yellen said that she had communicated concerns about new barriers to market access to foreign companies, as well as, quote, punitive actions that have been taken against U.S. firms in recent months.
I will always champion your interests and work to make sure there is a level playing field. This includes coordinating with our allies to respond to China's unfair economic practices.
Despite those concerns, Yellen told China's premier today that the U.S. wasn't seeking economic estrangement from China and that any disagreements regarding national security concerns shouldn't worsen bilateral relations. It is Jobs Friday, with the June survey of the U.S. labor market set to drop at 8:30 a.m. Eastern. Our labor economics reporter, Sarah Cheney Cambon, is awaiting the numbers.
The labor market has been surprisingly strong this year. Even though the Federal Reserve has been raising interest rates and the economy broadly is slowing, employers are still aggressively hiring. Economists surveyed by the Wall Street Journal estimate U.S. employers added 240,000 jobs in June, which would be down from May's job gain of 339,000, but still cap a solid first half of 2023 for the labor market.
It has now been 100 days since Wall Street Journal correspondent Evan Gershkovich was detained in Yekaterinburg, Russia, while on a reporting trip. He has been held since then in Moscow's Lefortovo prison and accused of espionage, a charge which he, the Journal, and the U.S. government vehemently deny. Gershkovich is the 31-year-old American son of Soviet emigres Mikhail and Ella, and they spoke to the Wall Street Journal's Shelby Holliday about the past 100 days.
It must feel very helpless.
It does.
How frustrating is it for you?
There's absolutely nothing I can do, even though I would like a chance to do anything.
Have there been any bright moments?
Bright moments were when we saw him.
Twice, Evan's parents, who left the Soviet Union to become American citizens, traveled from Philadelphia to Moscow to get a brief glimpse of their son in court. At a hearing in June, they were unexpectedly permitted to speak with him as he stood in a glass box known as the aquarium, and they were able to tell him they love him.
I was just beside myself, so happy. We were in deeply in our conversation. We were smiling and laughing. And the guard brought me back to reality that I'm in a courtroom. My son is in this aquarium, in this cage. And I had to realize where I was because I lost myself in that conversation. I was so happy to see him.
Seeing him just brought him a little bit back to me. Physical closeness made it a little bit more bearable.
And how did he seem?
He seemed well. He seemed in good spirits. He was smiling. He seemed to be happy to see us as well.
You leave the courtroom. You leave the country.
Yes, reality. It's even harder now to leave him there than it was the first time.
I try not to think about anything. It's just very hard.
You don't want your mind to go there.
I don't want my mind to go anywhere.
The conviction rate in Russia is nearly 100%.
Exactly. Especially in cases like that.
Is there anything about his case that gives you hope?
No. I rely on President Biden's promise to do whatever it takes to bring Evan back. He's an American boy. Bringing him back, I think it's a team effort.
That was Ella Milman and Mikhail Gershkovich speaking to my colleague Shelby Holliday. Their full interview is on WSJ.com, where we've also got a complete timeline of Evan's detention, as well as several options for those of you who want to help and show your support. Coming up, American banks, large and small, are under pressure. Our look at the looming warning signs as they prepare to report earnings next week after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Plus, save time by completing security questionnaires with Vanta AI. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ. That's VANTA.com/WSJ.
Following three U.S. regional bank failures this spring, we have often considered on this program which bank could be next. But as banks large and small begin reporting their quarterly earnings next week, the better question to ask may be, how are most of them doing even if a renewed banking crisis isn't in the cards? And that is because, according to our guests, Journal banking reporter Gina Heeb and finance reporter Jonathan Weil, many lenders are now contending with a slate of pressures. Jonathan, you are reporting on a fresh squeeze that banks are facing. Tell us about the forces that they are contending with now.
Imagine if a year or two ago you're a bank and you made a loan or you bought a bond that was generating 1% or 2% interest for you. And now that rates are about 5%, broadly speaking, those bonds and those loans that are on your balance sheet that you are supposedly holding for investment or holding maturity are worth much less if you went to go try to sell them or if you went to use them as collateral to borrow money yourself, they wouldn't be worth very much. And the problem is that if you're funding yourself with deposits, your depositors are suddenly wanting to get paid a lot more because they can go make 5% on a money market fund rather easily compared with the 1% you like to pay in deposits or less. So they're in a squeeze right now. We're going to be looking for a lot of stress coming up when banks report second quarter earnings. You're going to see a lot of investors asking to tell us now what the fair market value of those assets is.
Gina, I want to bring you into the conversation now. Jonathan mentioned depositors wanting greater returns and that they're getting that now. So why then are a number of Main Street banks, as you report, seeing continued outflows of deposits?
Right. So it's important to remember that this is in part what was supposed to happen when the Fed started to raise interest rates like this. You know, it expected deposits to flow out of banks. A problem for some is just how fast it has happened. This is the fastest rate of interest rate increases in decades. And many of these banks have been used to a really low interest rate environment for a really long time. So there was a bit of a lag for some of them to catch up. So even as some have raised interest rates on deposits, it's been kind of too little too late for them. Wealthy and business clients were already on their way out the door. And then the bank failures worsened that because, as Jonathan mentioned, it woke a lot of people up to the fact that they can make more if they park their deposits elsewhere.
And Gina, what are the numbers you're seeing that speak to this sort of delta between the amount banks are able to bring in on loans versus the evidently increased amount that they are paying out to depositors? Because we had been covering on the program criticism banks have been receiving for not passing along more of the interest rate benefit to consumers on deposits.
Right. Yeah, the interest that they're having to pay on deposits is definitely rising faster. A lot of community banks especially have fixed rate loans that take a while to mature, and they can't necessarily adjust those rates as the Fed hikes. Deposit costs are rising really fast, though. You know, it was nearly a half percentage point increase for deposits, and what they earned on loans was up only 16 basis points.
Gina, how serious of an issue is this ultimately for banks, and what could the consequences be if they can't balance their books here? I mean, at least according to one bank that you profiled, their raw material cost, as they described it, went up 600%. That seems serious.
So this is expected to put a lot of pressure on profitability, especially for these community banks. Profits at these smaller lenders are expected to decline 23% this year, according to estimates from S&P. And these sorts of banks are especially dependent on the interest income, which is the difference between what they're paying on deposits and what they're making on loans. When that's under pressure, it's a big deal for them. You know, and having these scarce deposits doesn't only mean they're paying more in interest. It also means that they have to pull back on the number of loans they're making, which is, again, the key way that they make money. So across the board, it's expected to be a really a tough environment, especially for community banks.
Right, so a tough environment for smaller banks, Jonathan. What does that mean for the industry as a whole then?
Well, broadly speaking, I see this as a continuum from 2008 and too big to fail. One of the things that a lot of depositors have been doing who may not necessarily want to chase a 5% money market yield, they just want to know that their money is safe. One of their first instincts a lot of times is to go just put the money into a too big to fail bank, which they know the government will not allow to fail. And so the government at some point is going to have to grapple with this policy that it has created, where there's an implicit, if not previously explicit, backstop for a number of large banks that have not managed their balance sheets any better than smaller banks have, but are benefiting on the deposit side implicitly from the too big to fail guarantee.
That was Wall Street Journal banking reporter Gina Hebe, as well as finance reporter Jonathan Weil. Thank you both.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
In other news moving the world today, the Biden administration is planning to send controversial cluster munitions to Ukraine to strengthen its hand in the high-stakes offensive against Russia. According to senior U.S. officials, the White House has agreed to grant a waiver under U.S. arms export laws to send the weapons as part of a broader package of military assistance. Ukraine has long appealed for the weapons, which strew small bomblets over a wide area. However, the White House had initially been reluctant to approve the transfer after human rights groups said that unexploded submunitions could maim or kill civilians long after a conflict ends. Samsung is forecasting its weakest quarterly performance in 14 years. Our Korea Bureau Chief Timothy Martin told me why the world's largest manufacturer of memory chips is struggling, while other semiconductor makers find their products in high demand thanks to the current artificial intelligence frenzy.
Unfortunately, the bump from the AI renaissance is not enough to overcome the broader slump in the tech industry. People aren't buying smartphones, computers, and other gadgets, and that really hurts Samsung. Samsung is expecting its operating profits will fall 96% for its second quarter from the prior year. But executives believe that the low point has been hit and that things will pick up in the back half of the year.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has granted full approval for Alzheimer's drug Leqembi, the breakthrough drug that is the first type of treatment to clearly slow cognitive decline in patients with early Alzheimer's. The FDA approval means that 6 million Americans who are living with the disease and who agree to report data to a registry can receive fully covered treatment under Medicare. Clinics say that they have already been flooded with queries from patients eager to use the drug. According to its producers, Eisai and Biogen, Leqembi is expected to generate $7 billion in annual sales globally by 2030. And Elon Musk's SpaceX has now got a virtual monopoly on rocket launches. New data shows that SpaceX's low-cost rockets powered 66% of U.S. customer flights last year and 88% since the start of this year, according to astrophysicist Jonathan McDowell. SpaceX is also the only one ferrying NASA astronauts to and from the International Space Station. And that dominance looks set to continue as rival vehicles from Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin and French launch company Arianespace are yet to launch, while the Russian invasion of Ukraine has put one alternative, the Russian Soyuz rocket, off limits for many potential buyers. And that is What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.